from the Hong Kong Philharmonic Orchestra this week. I think I might call him the middleman. Terry Yule, principal bassoon, who sits in the middle of the orchestra. Is there a particular reason for that?
Well, through the years, they've generally grouped the wind instruments into one area of the orchestra. Obviously, we don't want the oboes where the second violins are and the bassoons where the double basses are. We often do play as a choir, so to speak. And I'm grouped with the other principals of the woodwind section.
Which is to say that you've got the flute on your left. Let me figure this out.
No, it'd be on my right.
On your right.
Just forward of me. The oboe is forward of me directly, and the principal clarinets would be directly on my right.
Do you have any specific distance you sit from which you sit?
No, I just try to be able to see the conductor. Unfortunately, we've had a slew of very tall first oboe players the past few years.
Well, you're not so short yourself.
So I have to position my chair. I'll put in my order for a short one, I guess.
There's a really lot of listening that must be done.
Oh, certainly. Certainly. We, among the principals, we often play solos together, duets, and it's in a way, it's like chamber music in a recital hall.
Well, I guess it's a good place for you to be then. I think you make a beautiful sound,
oh,
Terry.
Thank you.
And so did they in Lubbock, Texas, last summer when you were on the stage all by yourself in this competition. Could you tell me more about the association and the conference?
The conference was a congregation of bassoonists, oboists, just double reed players from around the world, mostly from the United States. And it's a convention where people meet to swap ideas. We hear performances, lectures on various aspects of our instruments, and it's just a real enjoyable time to get to meet people. I've been corresponding with several of the people from the convention at this point, and it's a real enjoyable experience. The competition was part of the convention, and they set an age limit, and
which was
24 and under, and all the contestants had to submit a tape, which I did, as well as I guess it was over 20 others. And from that group, there were selected six to play at the convention in the semifinals. And we were each told what pieces we'd be playing for the semifinals as well as for the finals.
Now, how long did it take you to prepare yourself for this, physically?
Yeah, as soon as I learned about the competition, I did start preparing. I heard about it in December and got all the music. I had played the Saint-Saëns bassoon sonata earlier, and I began work immediately on that. I spent time just practicing each week on it, developing ideas about it, ways to interpret the music. And especially when I arrived in the States a month previous to the competition, I practiced with a pianist many, many times during the week, and eventually gave a performance there in preparation for this competition.
And, you know, your mental attitude was probably pretty good by then, I suppose.
I had figured, since I had done so much work on it, that I would be adequately prepared to compete. And I liken it to even long-distance running, in that often the person who wins the race is the one who's in the best condition. And I feel I'd really conditioned myself for this above what the other contestants did, because I had prepared it with the pianist. I knew the music inside out, practically had it all memorized, and had performed it as well under stressful conditions. And so I felt I could really know the music in inside out.
You still had a bit of a case of the nerves.
Oh, nerves are always a problem with me. I can't speak for anyone else, but it's my feeling. If I'm not nervous for a performance, it's because I don't care about it. And I really do care about the playing, the standard that I maintain and produce. And so obviously I was quite nervous for this.
Well, this was a very prestigious group of judges from America and Germany
and abroad,
and
yes.
Japan. Who were they?
Perhaps the most prestigious of the judges was Sol Schoenbach, who is one of the most famous bassoon instructors in the United States. I have never studied with him myself, but he had taught my teacher and about three or four other teachers that I have studied with. He played principal in the Philadelphia Orchestra, taught at Curtis as well. Another one of the judges was a bassoonist who had played in the San Francisco Symphony and now is in the Tokyo Metropolitan Symphony. And one of the oboe judges was, he was playing in the St. Paul Chamber Orchestra and now will be teaching at Eastman, the East Coast.
Well, you must, how far away were you from them?
You mean in the playing hall?
In distance, yeah. I mean, were they looking down, you're breathing down your
Actually,
back?
To tell you the truth, I never looked out in the audience to see where they were.
Was it dark out there?
Well, they dimmed the audience, and which is very nice.
And all, of course, all your colleagues were there as well.
Indeed.
Well, has this changed your attitude about playing solos and chamber music and things where you're very exposed? Do you feel more confident? Do you feel...
I feel like I've gained a little bit more mastery over my instrument because of this. And working for the competition, I feel like I've gained, you know, certain aspects of tone and just consistency, I feel, are better in my playing at this point than they were, say, last year.
But generally speaking, do you think competitions are a good thing?
They are a good thing. They can be very damaging. Of course.
Because of the nerves, right? Someone who's terribly good could be destroyed and not go on with a career because they had a bad day.
Right. And it's really hard to judge. Competition does spur people on to practice, and I know it spurred me on to do my utmost in terms of practicing and in the performance.
Well, I felt in Hong Kong that the piano competitions that go on here in the school's music festival are marvelous things, but I also have a feeling that it keeps them from learning a lot more of the repertoire that they should know to become complete musicians. Still, skill,
yeah,
technique, and all this are...
This could be. Unfortunately, it's the musician's lot to compete. It's like sports, it's competitive. The audiences want the best. They don't want to see the 32nd best runner in the marathon. They want to see the best runner in the marathon. In the same way, they don't want to hear the 122nd best pianist in the world. They want to hear the best.
Well, and they pays their money,
yeah,
and they've got the right.
They've got the right.
Well, speaking of audiences, what is the effect of an audience on players? Say, if you go out to the AC Hall and you see a small audience, or to Chun Wan.
It's very deflating to go into a performing situation and just see a handful of people.
You must feel sort of deflated before you even start to blow.
You feel like just what you're doing is futile because hardly anybody's there. We play for the audience, and the audience is perhaps the most important part of the musical experience. We have sort of a dialogue. We're transmitting, if you will, the composer's intent the way he wanted the audience to hear it, and we're transmitting it into the 20th century to this group of people out there. And if there's no one there, then it's sort of like a tree falling in a forest and nobody's there to hear it. And so what was it worth? You just play.
Well, the atmosphere
beyond
is electric,
yourself,
isn't it?
Indeed, yes.
Well, let's listen to the second movement of the Saint-Saëns Sonata that you played at the competition in Lubbock, Texas.
Okay.
Delightful. Very, very. I'm not surprised that you won the $500 prize.
Oh, thank you.
But that wasn't the most important part of it, was it?
No, it was playing before prestigious teachers and colleagues and musicians.
Now, you said you only worked with that pianist for about 2 hours before you actually had to perform and win the prize.
That is right, and it's a difficult situation. I really...
How do you compare to playing in the orchestra?
In many ways, it's similar in that we do have many new players in the orchestra, and we don't have the advantages of a seasoned orchestra where people have been playing together for 10, 20 years, and they know down to the nuance what the other person is going to do.
I suppose they almost breathe together, don't they?
They do. They do. And it's a matter of second guessing where the other person's going to put the pitch, where they're going to play a certain note. And it, well, I liken it to, say, a football team, even a relay team. You have a four-man relay team competing at Olympic standards. You suddenly shift one of the members, their timing is going to be off. The passing of the baton will be perhaps just a bit slow. The uncomfortable feeling of not knowing if that person's going to grab the baton quite right, or if you're going to pass it in the place they expect you to pass it. And we're passing batons all the time in the orchestra. I pass it to the oboe passes it to the strings, and it's this linkage that is very difficult when you have new members in the group, no matter how fine the members. I just hope our orchestra will build in the future, and we'll have people staying here longer so we can really get this baton linking.
Well, I think it's going that way. That's a marvelous analogy to pass the baton around. The conductor is also a very important part
indeed.
Of the orchestra.
Indeed.
And whether he stimulates and excites and and teaches. I think every new conductor must be another learning experience.
It is. There's a dialogue between the conductor and the orchestra in rehearsals and in performances. The way the conductor looks, the way he beats his baton, will inspire you to play it a certain way.
And the players know whether he knows what's
going
on, right?
Absolutely. And I think the audience knows it, too. They can see our response after a concert. Or they can see it during the concert, you know.
Well, it certainly was very enthusiastic last Saturday night. And one of our subscribers called up, in fact, and said, he said, I just feel that the orchestra sounded so abandoned, and they sounded so free and so excited and happy about their playing. Which
I hope it was a disciplined abandon there.
So, tell me something about your instrument. This thing that is 16 feet long, is it? It winds itself around each other?
Mine is actually 8 feet long. It's a wood instrument, sort of a wood casing. Some of it's lined with a type of rubber. Gosh, I'm not a physics major. I can't tell you its composition. But my particular bassoon was made in Western Germany. It's considered one of the finest factories producing bassoons. It's called the Heckel factory. They produce roughly about 100 a year. They have quite a backlog, but usually about 2 or 3 years waiting list for these bassoons, and they're tremendously expensive.
I ask?
Well, they're from probably 50,000 Hong Kong and upwards, depending on what kind of keywork you want, additions, other things.
It would be very difficult for a young Chinese bassoonist then to buy one.
This is one of the difficulties.
How many students have you got?
I right now have 2 at the Hong Kong Conservatory, and both of them are excellent Chinese players. Basically, I feel what's lacking is we're isolated here in Hong Kong.
From other orchestras, bassoonists, flautists.
We don't have the standards of Europe or, say, the United States.
But still, far better than it was, say, 10 years ago.
Oh.
I think that the orchestra is a glorious instrument. I really do.
Terrific.
And when you're not playing music, what do you do?
Well, maybe interestingly enough, I actually don't listen to very much music in terms of relaxation and things. Music is work to me. And when I listen to music, I work at it. I do a lot of church work. I lead a Bible study on Tuesdays. Laurel and I both attend a church that meets in the Furama Hotel on Sunday mornings. And we've really been welcomed in by the church and just enjoy being with those people, socializing with them, worshiping and praying with them. And it's just really that's relaxation to me.
From all sorts of nationalities.
Indeed, yes.
And you find the Bible one of the most fascinating books you've read.
There has probably been about, say, 3 books in my entire life that I've read more than once. And the Bible I've read through many times, and I really do literally memorize it in studying
it. Okay, Genesis 1:22.
Well, I don't know that.
How about in the beginning?
In the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth, and the earth was without form and void. And God divided the waters. I can't go on much beyond that.
Well, in the beginning, there, you know, was an orchestra, and it's growing.
Yes.
And we're very glad that you're a part of it. Thank you, Terry.
Oh, thank you very much. Enjoyed being here with you.